All right, my next guest is Nick Cherney, head of exchange-traded products at Janus Henderson, who currently offers six ETFs over $4 billion in assets. That includes the Janus Henderson AAA CLO ETF, has a great ticker, JAAA, that launched in October of last year, and it's what we'll be spotlighting this week. Nick is now on the line with me from Colorado. Nick, it's a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, Nate. Great to be here.
All right, so my sense is when investors hear CLOs, collateralized loan obligations, I feel like they automatically start thinking back to CDOs and the global financial crisis, and they start having all sorts of bad flashbacks. So let's start with what a CLO is and what it isn't. So how do you like to describe these?
Yeah, I think you're right that, the CLO is, you know, another one of these three-letter acronyms, and investors, I think, rightfully are a little wary of three-letter acronyms in finance, and so we certainly spend a fair amount of time kind of articulating the differences. But you know, CLOs are really a completely different animal than CDOs, and really what it boils down to is that CLOs are just a way to take the leveraged loan market, the bank loan market, whatever you want to refer to it as, right? Which as we know is a pretty major tool for small businesses across America to get funding. And it takes those loans, preserves the floating rate nature of them, right? So some of the interest rate characteristics that are pretty beneficial for a lot of folks, and really packages them up to enhance the credit quality. So we focus on this AAA portion of the stack, which is the highest portion of the credit profile. And really what that is doing is basically putting together a pool of bank loans and then deferring or sort of reallocating payments in a priority fashion to enhance the credit quality. So what happens is when you buy a AAA CLO, really what you're buying is a pool of bank loans where you have priority on the cash flows of those bank loans. And so, I think there are some structural similarities to other asset-backed securities. But the big difference is really around, kind of two things. The first one is that the structure has changed dramatically since the financial crisis, what we sort of call CLO 2.0. So there's been a lot of enhancements made. And then the second is just the quality of the collateral. So it's the underlying loan market that you're using. And that sort of, I think, evidences itself in the behavior of CLOs, which have actually, AAA CLOs have never had a default, even in the great financial crisis. So going back now about 30 years, you've never seen a single AAA CLO default. So they're a pretty robust product. It's been around quite a long time. And as you said, there's some similarities, but pretty distinct from those kind of I would say controversial securitized products that had problems back in 2008.
And Nick, in terms of the actual leverage loans or the bank loans themselves, can you talk a little bit more about exactly what these are? Because I've seen, are these typically below investment grade? Are they always floating rate? I know that I've seen a lot of smaller companies tend to access these just because they can't access the bond market. Can you just talk more about the overall profile of leverage loans?
Right. Yeah. And that's important to understand, right? Because, ultimately the collateral behind CLOs is this bank loan market or as it's sometimes referred to, the leverage loan market. And that's over a $1 trillion market, right? So it's really a very important way for smaller companies, as you point out, to get financing. And these are fully secured loans, right? But they come with higher risk. And so the whole market is, below investment grade. Almost all floating rate. Mm-hmm. And it really is the mechanism where companies who cannot get sort of senior unsecured loans because of the size or the risk profile, they can't issue those bonds, and they need to get financing, and they need to access financing. And the bank loan market has really become the primary mechanism for doing that. And it's become a popular area for ETF investors as well, right? And the reason for that is because a lot of investors are willing to take on that credit risk, right? Sub-investment grade risk in order to get the yields that are associated with that, which can be pretty healthy, 4 or 5% for the last couple of years. And more importantly, I think for a lot of investors, they're getting that floating rate exposure. And so the thing with the AAA CLOs is you're getting that same floating rate exposure. You're getting a little bit less yield than you would Obviously for bank loans directly, but that's because you've taken away most of that credit risk and moved from a junk bond type of product into a AAA sort of product. And so, I think that bank loan market is very robust, growing. And as I mentioned, it's over $1 trillion issuance today.
And so before we get to the ETF, if I could just sort of restate everything that you covered at a very basic level, effectively CLOs are comprised of these bank loans or leveraged loans. And basically, there are these tranches of CLOs that are able to gain a AAA rating because they're pooling multiple loans together, right? So even though the individual loans and the CLOs themselves are below investment grade, this diversity of the CLO is what changes the overall rating characteristics. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so, like you said, the most important part is that it's a broad-based basket of underlying bank loans. But then a really important component is that the way the CLO is structured is that if some of those bank loans start to default, not only are the payments from the remaining loans going first to the AAA stack, but it actually reallocates those payments. And so, one way to think about this, which I think is sort of, it's a little technical, but it is really kind of an important part of how these work, is that, the way to think about the likelihood of a default in, let's say, a AAA CLO is what percentage of that underlying portfolio would itself have to default, mm-hmm. right? And we call that the credit support level. And in order for a AAA CLO to default, you would have to have 35% of the underlying companies be in what we would call continuous default, meaning defaulting for over a year. So that's an extremely high level. And if you look at over the last 25 years in the larger kind of universe of bank loans, we've never achieved even half of that, including during the Great Financial Crisis. So you would really need an extreme economic event where over 35% of this market and these companies would be in default for over a year before you could see the beginning of a default in a AAA CLO.
And where do CLOs typically trade? Is it just over the counter like any bond?
Well, this is really one of the most interesting things for us about bringing this product out is that, the CLO market is really large, right? I mean, it's over $700 billion. That's about a third of the muni market, right? The investment grade CLO market is larger than the investment grade floating rate market for corporate securities. But historically, really until we launched this product, that market has only been available to large institutional investors because the CLOs do trade over the counter like bonds, but they tend to trade in very large sizes, typically $250,000 increments. And so as a result, they've really only been accessed by very large institutional investors. That includes, mutual fund managers, a lot of insurance companies, global institutions. And so what this is really doing is enabling, folks to trade a diversified basket of CLOs in much smaller increments. And so the challenge before was if you wanted to build a diversified portfolio, you needed to have a very, very large allocation to CLOs, considering your minimum piece size was typically around $250,000. So that's really restricted the distribution. But yes, they trade similarly to other bonds on a par basis or discount basis and trade over the counter with major banks and dealers.
No, it's a good point with an ETF now providing access to the CLO market, because this is, again, just another example of ETFs democratizing access to an asset class that was previously only available to institutional investors. And so let's talk more about the ETF itself, the Janus Henderson AAA CLO ETF. Again, ticker symbol JAAA. Talk about exactly what this holds and how it's managed. I know it's an active ETF.
Yeah, it is an active ETF. I would say the active portion really comes in around risk management. So there's a universe of about 110 CLO issuers out there. We're benchmarked against an index of entirely AAA CLO issuance. We currently hold about 46 positions. We have a lot of risk control in there. It's a 15% cap on any given issuer. And really the core of what we're doing on the active side is that risk analysis, that diligence. And then we have one other component, which is that we have 90% of the fund on initial purchases is AAA CLOs. And then we have a 10% bucket that we can go as low as single A. And really what we're doing is trying to identify those opportunities in the single A space where we think there is really the right risk reward, hopefully to get us to a product that at the end of the day, net of fees, using that 10% bucket, will give similar yield and return profile to direct exposure to AAA. So basically what we're doing is trying to analyze risk, trying to improve the quality of the portfolio relative to the benchmark, and then hopefully offsetting our management fees, which start at 25 basis points, by kind of very selectively allocating a small portion of the position into, or the portfolio, into these single A positions.
I know yields obviously can move around a lot, but can you give just a general impression of what the yields on something like JAAA look like compared to other segments of the market? And then because these are floating rate, I'm assuming the effective duration is pretty close to zero, correct?
Right, right. So, I mean, for us, this is really what finally drove us to bring this product to market. AAA CLOs have historically yielded something like double the yield of comparable investment grade floating rate bonds, right? Corporate bonds. Mm-hmm. And so you see a huge amount of money and a lot of investors putting money into this investment grade floating rate space simply because it seems more familiar, right? Well, the investment grade market is about 75% below AA, right? But yet is yielding less than half of a AAA product with the same duration, which, as you mentioned, is close to zero, right? If you think about a 3-month reset, a weighted portfolio is going to have about a month and a half of duration, right, on average. And so very, very low duration, much higher credit quality and yielding about twice as much. So today, and again, as you said, it sort of moves around. But if you look at the investment grade floating rate market, let's call it 40 to 50 basis points, you know, AAA CLOs have been yielding around 110 to 120 basis points. So currently as much as three times as much as that investment grade floating rate market. And again, kind of pretty systematically over the last 4 or 5 years, more than double the yield of the investment grade market.
Throughout our discussion here so far, I think you've done a good job of laying out some of the potential benefits of this ETF, but can you talk more about how you see investors using this ETF in a portfolio? Like where exactly does this fit? And, you know, perhaps lay out any additional benefits that we haven't covered yet.
Yeah, and we should definitely, you know, touch on the risks a little bit too, right? And one of those things which I think for us was the real threshold event to get us comfortable bringing this product out is around liquidity. So the underlying investment structure, you know, for a buy and hold investor in AAA CLOs is just incredibly robust, right? And I gave you some of the statistics and a little bit of the kind of structuring that makes it work that way. But the one risk that is, you know, I think has a lot of people over the years have thought about is if you're not planning to hold that CLO to maturity, what about the liquidity? What about the secondary market? And so what happened really was that, you know, during the COVID crisis, when we had pretty severe bond market dislocations, the AAA CLO market really came into its own. And in fact, in March and April was setting all-time records in terms of secondary trading volume. And so what we saw was that it was actually much more liquid than the investment grade and corporate bond markets. And so we got very comfortable with that liquidity. But that remains, I would say, probably one of the most significant things to think about. And when we're doing the management of this product and selecting the CLOs we're going to own, that's one of the primary things that we're thinking about is identifying deals where, you know, we believe the liquidity will be as deep as possible. And then, of course, as your listeners are familiar with, there's some advantages of the ETF structure that help there. But listen, in terms of the portfolio and where it fits, I think it's pretty interesting, right? There's a lot of concern around the potential for rising rates, and that is pushing people into floating rate product. And really, the two primary areas is either bank loans, or investment grade floating rate corporate debt. And so in both cases, I think investment grade floating rate corporate debt, you know, it's hard for me to understand the advantage of that asset class over AAA CLOs, because again, you're getting lower credit quality, the same duration and half the yield. In the case of bank loans, you're at least getting compensated with much higher yields, but you're doing that at the cost of credit. And so I think what we see is that people who want to maintain high credit quality right now have concerns about, you know, overall corporate credit exposures, can get a higher credit quality, maybe pairing that with bank loans while lowering duration. But really what we see this as is some people are using it as a cash alternative to get enhanced yields over money markets with a AAA rating, and then a lot of people thinking about pairing it with bank loans to get that same floating rate exposure, but but really bring down the credit risk in the portfolio. And, you know, you're looking at something like a 14% correlation to the ag. So it really is sort of this third bucket alongside your equity and fixed income portfolio where you can manage duration down, still get some, you know, meaningful yields, you know, certainly relative to cash and cash alternative positions.
Briefly, going back to the risks or the potential risks you were talking about and you were mentioning liquidity, I want to expand on that just a little bit because I feel like some investors, they look to bond ETFs, especially in the high yield market, even some of the senior bank loan ETFs. And you always hear about this mismatch in liquidity, right? That you have this highly liquid ETF wrapper, but the underlying's not quite liquid enough. Can you just talk more about the market depth here? Because as you said, I mean, the CLO market has grown substantially, but it doesn't sound like you have any concerns that in a deteriorating credit market environment, that perhaps liquidity would dry up, you know, and we just had a test to that last March with a COVID crash, which you mentioned. But can you just talk more about, you know, whether that could negatively impact the ETF?
Yeah, well, I think there's two things there, right? It's frustrating to me, I think, that there still is this misnomer out there about the ETF wrapper itself and how that relates to liquidity of the underlying market. And so, because of the fact that these ETFs, you know, are not having to buy and sell bonds within the portfolio as a result of client flows, right? Those flows are coming through the creation and redemption process. And so that actually, in a lot of ways, makes the ETF wrapper more suitable for illiquid assets than a traditional 40 Act fund, because what happens is the transactions, right? If a client wants to sell during an illiquid period, the cost of doing that is borne by that client, not by the remaining shareholders, like would be the case in a mutual fund. So in terms of the wrapper itself, I actually, I'm a little disheartened that many investors out there still kind of hold this idea that the ETF is somehow problematic when the underlying is slightly less liquid, when in fact it's really the other way around. In most cases, the ETF is a preferred wrapper relative to a mutual fund to gain access to less liquid securities. But all of that then, of course, boils down to the liquidity of that underlying market. And so I think what you said is true, right? On the one hand, yes, we are very comfortable that the liquidity that was demonstrated during the COVID crisis, right, much better behavior out of the CLO market in terms of increased liquidity, spreads, et cetera, relative to what we saw in the corporate side. So, for example, many mutual funds were actually looking to CLOs to raise cash because it was just too hard to sell their corporate credit positions, right? So we're pretty comfortable that market has become quite robust, but still, you know, bonds are less liquid in times of stress than equities, for example. And so it is a big risk that we focus on. And it's one of the core reasons that we think a product like this really needs to be actively managed, is to think carefully about which CLOs we own. And people need to understand that you can have dislocations due to liquidity. So, for example, during the COVID crisis, you know, the AAA CLO benchmark sold off about 10%, which is a pretty significant move. Now, that fully recovered within, I think, maybe a month and a half. And so, you know, a lot of people would view that as a buying opportunity because the underlying fundamentals, you know, of the CLOs themselves didn't change. But like the corporate credit market, you know, during times of stress, you can certainly see short-term price dislocations in those underlying markets. We just got quite comfortable that the stability of that market was more than robust enough for an ETF to be listed, and that's really why we brought the product out.
Nick, just a couple of minutes left here. You've given a few of your, I feel like, high-level thoughts on the bond market. But I'd love, do you have any more detailed thoughts on the bond market as a whole right now? You know, it's pretty interesting in that there's been a lot of inflation talk, but we've seen yields actually come back in recently. Any thoughts on what's been going on here?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I guess we're, what, a decade of people saying that interest rates are going to go up soon?
At least.
And, you know, so, right. So it's a little hard to, you know, make predictions in that space. But what I will say is that, you know, coming off the COVID crisis, I think there was this dual concern around both credit and interest rate risk, right? We were facing this really kind of uncertain scenario where nobody really knew what would be happening with the economy. A lot of concerns around, for example, bank loans and those smaller companies and how they would fare. And then that was kind of coupled, you know, with this kind of ongoing concern around rising interest rates. Today, I think a lot of those credit concerns have been alleviated. We sort of see a pretty significant rebound in the economy. I think people's comfort with the sort of stability of those underlying loan markets has gone up for sure. But that's then led, of course, directly to this fear of inflation, and certainly, you know, the Fed's commentary has stoked that a little bit. And so what we really see today is an easing of concern around credit risks, but potentially an increase in concern around inflation, and then, of course, the follow-on effect of that, which would be rising rates. And so what we really see is a desire for people to potentially pair something like this along with a bank loan product, where they can kind of blend those two to get a little bit lower risk on the credit side and be prepared for that inflationary environment. But I think really it is inflation that everybody's concerned about, and so regardless of how you build that portfolio, certainly having a plan and being prepared and well positioned should inflation come along, and of course then rates rise. But as you said, you know, certainly in the near term or more recently, you know, the interest rates have you know, defied that expectation.
Well, Nick, excellent perspective this week. I certainly wish you continued success with this AAA CLO ETF. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, Nate, thank you. It was great talking with you.
That was Nick Cherney, head of exchange-traded products at Janus Henderson.